One, two, three. Hello, and welcome to ILVI Podcasts. We talk about issues of work and virtual communication in international business. I'm Erica from ILVI International HR, and I'm Liz from Splendid Blended Learning. Are meetings often dominated by native speakers or those who are proficient in English? How does this aspect influence teamwork and project decision-making? Why is it important to talk about this aspect? And what can we do to encourage participatory meetings with diverse groups? This is our topic in today's podcast. Erica, you and I have both experienced virtual meetings which didn't work so well because they were dominated by native speakers of English. I experienced as an English speaker and you as a non-native. So what was it like for you? One, two, three. One, two, three. I remember one of my first distance work with the German team. That was 10 or 12 years ago. Our coordinator was German. He chose the chat as a means of communication for our first team meeting. The proposal for the meeting was a brainstorming on the topic of our project. I remember that we started, and while the other members started writing their proposals, I started getting desperate because the ideas were going too fast. While I was writing my contribution, I couldn't concentrate on following the other topics of the meeting. And when I could finally finish my idea, they were already on the next agenda item. After 45 minutes, I was frustrated by this online chat session. I was not able to contribute my whole ideas to the project, as I had hoped, and so I decided to send my opinions by email later. What I learned from this situation was I needed much more time to make a contribution, because German was not my mother tongue, and I did not want to make any mistakes when writing. At the same time, I realised that my team had not realised the situation. They were left with the idea that I was reserved. How was it for you, Liz? One, two, three. One, two, three. Well, the first time I came across this situation was 5 years ago in one of my first Zoom meetings. This was the team's first meeting altogether, and it was held in English. But there were only two native speakers of English. The others were two Germans, one Polish, and one Spanish speaker. The other English speaker and I quickly established rapport through humour, and soon it was only the two of us bouncing ideas off each other. He was really funny and had great ideas, and I really enjoyed the discussion. I remember wondering why the others were so quiet, and when I asked them if they wanted to contribute something, they said, no, it's okay. At some point, I started to feel a bit guilty about dominating the conversation, but I thought that, well, I had tried to include them, but they said no. I assumed that if they really wanted to say something, they would. I mean, I would never laugh at their English or correct them. I was just happy that the meeting was possible, as I don't speak Spanish or Polish. I was looking forward to hearing their ideas and happy that they were prepared to make the effort to speak English. I'm an English teacher. But this wasn't a lesson, so I didn't want to make it sound like one. You know, being overly patient, eliciting answers, helping them to find the right word. In hindsight, perhaps I should have done more of that. One, two, three. One, two, three. So we've both had similar experiences, but from opposite sides of the table. That reminds me of something I read. Richard Lewis, who wrote When Cultures Collide, makes the point that we all think in so-called internalized language, or in a monologue. So our thinking is heavily influenced by the language structure of our mother tongue. It's not just a matter of your level of fluency in English, it's also the fact that if your language is quite different in structure from English, your thoughts may not translate into English with the speed and ease required by fast conversations in meetings. One, two, three. One, two, three. Yeah, good point. German, for example, uses many compound nouns which express complex concepts in one word, which often have to be broken down and rearranged when speaking English. This requires quick mental gymnastics. One, two, three. Another good example would be Japanese. Anything actually said in Japanese, for instance, has first been internally vetted for politeness, with a large part of the final message being communicated non-verbally, making it extremely hard to translate this way of thinking or expressing yourself into quick, low-context English. One, two, three. One, two, three. Right. and these difficulties are compounded by the current trend towards virtual meetings, where hardly any non-verbal language can be expressed, and even the bits that can, for example, facial expressions or hand gestures, are easily missed by other viewers, as the live images are sometimes very small or not visible in big meetings. Also, eye contact can't focus on all images at once, so the host and other participants often can't even see when someone is indicating that they want to speak. Then they lose their chance when a quicker speaker who doesn't have to translate thought structures from one language to another hops in and dominates the conversation. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. So we have two issues here: the appropriate choice of communication tool and knowing how to hold virtual meetings so that both native and non-native speakers are supported. Both are vital and play a significant role that can either guarantee success or hinder remote work processes. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. So where does this leave us? Well, it means a change of mindset. For English native speakers, it means realizing that if someone doesn't speak English well, it doesn't mean that he or she doesn't have really interesting points of view. We might understand this academically, in other words, with our heads, but not with our hearts, meaning we've never experienced this emotionally ourselves. We don't know how it feels to sit there in a meeting and not have the words we need quick enough to say what we want to say. So in the heat of the moment, we don't pay any attention to it. What has to happen is that we, the native speakers, develop empathy for the non-native experience and actively try to involve them and give them enough time, realizing that this is good for the meeting outcome and business in general. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. For non-native speakers of English, we have to understand that most native speakers would never dream of making fun of another person's English. They'll be very tolerant of mistakes and happy to help with words or expressions. They'll ask for clarification if they don't understand. Most people want to hear our ideas and opinions and don't care about how correct our English is. 1, 2, 3. 1, 2, 3. So now to our listeners. What about your experiences with this? Do you have anything you'd like to share with us? If you'd like to talk about this in more detail, we'd be happy to talk to you. Just write us an email. 1, 2, 3.